Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and for the next few minutes, we have so much important health-supporting information for you. Hi, Dr. Slavin.
Hi, Janet. I'd like to just remind our listeners, I think the common denominator about the topics of our show is bringing you information that'll help keep you healthy.
A novel approach. I tell people all the time, when you're seeing your physician, he is trained at identifying symptoms, putting a name to those symptoms called a disease or a syndrome, and then giving you a pharmaceutical. So what people are going to hear on Natural Talk Radio is very, very different, as you say.
So we know antibiotics have their place, but it should be a much smaller place than they're currently occupying. And the headline for this is, there are antibiotics in your fish. Now, and who would have thought of that, right?
I think a lot of people will be surprised to hear that phrase, there are antibiotics in your fish.
Now, there's an acronym, CAFO. Is it CAFO or CAFO?
Or caged animal feeding.
Well, it stands for confined animal feeding operation.
Oh, right, okay.
All right, it's CAFO. Now, you may have heard us talk about that before, and those animals include cattle and chickens, and they're fed antibiotics at low doses because, believe it or not, antibiotics improve growth. And since those animals are sold by weight, the bigger you can make them, the more money they get. But here's the problem. The antibiotics that are fed to the animals to increase their weight are transferred to the meat and even the manure that's used as crop fertilizers. So now you can see how these antibiotics get into the environment and get into your body when you eat that meat. The same problems that are occurring on land are now occurring in the sea with farmed fish being another major outlet for antibiotic usage. And why is that? For the same reason. They're putting, well, not quite for the same reason. I don't think they're giving the antibiotics to the fish for growth. They're giving it for disease prevention because these fish are all penned up and there's an increased risk of infections, and now they're throwing antibiotics in the water.
But also they do want to cause those fish to mature more quickly and gain weight more quickly. So the antibiotics do play a role in that maturing process. Very, very much hormonally interrupting natural cycles of growth in the fish.
And here's a scary thought, at least to my way of thinking, is industrial fish farming or aquaculture is the fastest growing form of food production in the world. And currently, about half the world's seafood now comes from fish farms, including in the U.S., and this is expected to increase. So you can't even get normally grown fish from the wild. You can, but it's becoming more and more difficult.
More and more difficult because the feeding grounds are being interrupted, the ecology of the oceans is strained. And so a very significant price increase because there are fewer and fewer fish to be caught.
Now, try and envision this. Farmed fish are raised in pens in the ocean, which means not only that pathogens, that's like bacteria or viruses, can occur, but they can also spread quickly because it's in the water. And, the fish farms are basically CAFOs, or confined animal feeding operations at sea, and it's a potential problem. It's a real problem. We've trying to make paint a picture for you, because we've said all along, buy wild fish, don't buy farmed fish. But I think this gives you a better picture. Imagine all these pens; these fish are confined to these pens, growing in close quarters, dumping antibiotics in the water. And then this is what you're going to eat.
There's waste from those confined feeding operations, and that concentrated pollution is denigrating the environment. And it's very interesting because if you look at a menu in a restaurant and they say North Atlantic salmon, it would lead someone to believe that the North Atlantic salmon are these naturally fished salmon swimming up very, very cold rivers in the Scandinavian countries in Ireland and Scotland. But this is very far from the truth. These fish are from confined areas in the North Atlantic Ocean.
So what you're saying is those are healthier fish to be eating?
No, because...
These are the pent fish you're talking about?
Yeah, when you go to the restaurant, you're misled. North Atlantic salmon sounds like it's healthy, but it's really confined animal feeding.
In the North Atlantic.
So they
want to be tricky. You know, think about it. If they were so proud of what they were doing, they wouldn't have to try and trick you into eating their food. So is wild enough? Can you be wild and in a pen at the same time?
I believe that they are, when they designate wild caught, that it is truly wild caught. And one of the things that I focus on would be wild caught Alaskan salmon, because there are very specific rules about sustainably harvesting the fish in Alaska.
Now, in the last two decades, aquaculture production has nearly tripled. And with the rise has come some significant increase in the use of antibiotics. In the largest study of antibiotics in U.S. seafood to date, researchers have detected 5 different antibiotics in shrimp, salmon, tilapia, and trout. I mean, and why is that something to be considered? You know, antibiotics will promote drug-resistant microorganisms. So now you get sick, you need an antibiotic. Sorry, it's not going to work because that bacteria has become resistant to the antibiotic.
And I think it's very important you mentioned salmon, shrimp, tilapia, and trout. And if people were to do a little bit of investigation about the tilapia farming, they would be appalled at the conditions in which those fish are raised.
Now, I have to tell a little story here because it's going to lead into the next part of our conversation. I had a friend once, and he was obsessed with growing hair on his head, you know, male pattern baldness. And he would go swimming once a week in the ocean. And he tells me the story, you know, one day he was in the ocean and we, you know, got the seaweed and we was rubbing on his scalp.
And then obsessed.
Then his scalp, he figured he's rubbing nutrients in and everything else. Because he was into health and natural things. And he felt tingling in his scalp and he felt, boy, this is really working. It's doing something. It's like he's making the hair grow. It turned out what he was being exposed to was sea lice. You know, so that wasn't such a smart thing in retrospect.
Apparently
but
not.
But sea lice are a type of crustacean that is easily incubated by captive fish on farms, and they become a significant problem and have been blamed for the declining numbers of wild pink salmon, as well as the species that eat them, bears, eagles, orcas, and others. What is that about? Well, what they're doing is, in order to control the sea lice, the fish farms are now using pesticides.
Wow.
And these pesticides, and they're using all different types of, you know, with long names, it doesn't matter. They're now showing up in dangerous levels in the water, seabed sediment, and various marine organisms near Norwegian fish farms. So you can just look at the domino effect here. You started giving it for the sea lice, and it gets into the food chain, and now it's hurting the salmon, it's hurting the animals that eat the salmon. It's unbelievable.
Because we're broadcasting from Florida, I have a little bit of a reference with regard to what you were just mentioning, Dr. Slavin. When I first moved to Florida and you were swimming in the ocean, the weather would change around April and that became more and more beach weather. Well, over the years, in the springtime, there would be warning signs that the ocean was full of sea lice. So there would be a particular time of the year when you literally could not go in the ocean here in Florida because of the presence of sea lice. And it's a very uncomfortable situation to have sea lice bite you.
Well, here's what they say. The extensive use of these chemicals in aquaculture, and again, they're being used to try and control sea lice, among other things, could easily have devastating effects, especially considering how far they travel in the water and how long they persist. One study found a drug used to kill sea lice also kills other marine invertebrates, can travel up to half a mile and persist in the water for hours.
Side effects. Unfortunately, when the chemical companies produce all of these different options, pesticides and so on, just like the pharmaceuticals, unfortunately, they're not considering the additional effects, the negative side effects. As with pharmaceuticals, there's a risk-benefit, and this is not necessarily being considered.
As with everything, when you use an antibiotic or a pesticide or an herbicide, eventually you see resistance, and that's exactly what's happening with the sea lice. They're becoming resistant to all these chemicals that they've been using to control it, and the problem with that is now you have two problems. You've got the contamination of the ocean with the pesticides, and you've got the sea lice out of control. They didn't say exactly what effect the sea lice is having on the fish that they were trying to protect in the first place. But
well, there's a natural order of things, and the sea lice may keep under control some other organism in that whole picture of life under the sea, and the sea lice might also be a food for another level of aquatic life. So there's this whole big picture that is not being understood before they present the chemicals into the feeding operations.
Well, what will happen is, for example, the salmon lice, which are developing resistance to the different chemicals, will present a challenge to the salmon, because you're not going to have any salmon if you can't get rid of the lice. And this whole idea of farming at sea is probably not a good idea.
So this idea of frankenfish, as some organizations have been referring to the genetic modification of some of the fish, as well as raising these fish in confined operations. The picture is much bigger than, unfortunately, is being considered.
Now, remember when I quizzed you with this question, how can you get antibiotics without a prescription?
I use that line all the time, Dr. Slavin, but I always attribute it to you.
Well, agricultural uses of antibiotics account for about 80% of all antibiotic use in the United States. And the reason the farmers use it, they use, you know, continuous low-dose administration because it helps with weight gain in livestock for a relatively low cost. In other words, I guess it's cheaper than food.
So here's my theory with regard to the contamination of so much of our animal source food with antibiotics. More and more and more people being diagnosed with gastroesophageal reflux disease, irritable bowel, spastic colon, sensitive stomach, indigestion, heartburn, all of those types of symptoms, that whole category, possibly due to the antibiotic contamination, and the people don't even realize that they're consuming the antibiotics.
It's a real problem. The antibiotics, the diseases that normally are controlled with the antibiotics are becoming resistant. So now you have, one example is Salmonella bacteria is now resistant to antibiotics. It's known that certain animals may act as super spreaders, of disease, in which they shed large amounts of bacteria in their feces that make other animals sick. And of course, when you're, that's not an issue if you're out in the wild and not, but it becomes an issue when you're penned up. And here's the interesting thing. The super spreaders have no symptoms themselves. So that's like,
wow.
So what was that?
Typhoid Mary.
Right? The animal study showed that some salmonella-infected mice, given the antibiotic streptomycin, began to shed large quantities of the bacteria, essentially becoming super spreaders, except in this case, the animals also became ill. In other words, instead of reducing the risk of infection, the antibiotic treatment had the opposite effect, and instead of an increased infection risk. And the results held true with other antibiotics like neomycin. The study's lead researcher noted, if this holds true for livestock as well, and I think it will, it would have obvious public health implications. We need to think about the possibility that we're not only selecting for antibiotic-resistant microbes, but also impairing the health of our livestock and increasing the spread of contagious pathogens among them and us.
It's very much an issue because when you start to think about the dairy products in particular, this is an absolutely revolting situation. The animals are given hormones to make them produce higher quantities of milk, which leads to specific illness for which they're given higher and higher amounts of antibiotics, and it makes for an unbelievably nasty combination of components in the milk and the dairy products that are produced from that milk, and people have no idea what they're consuming.
Well, here's a sobering thought. According to the Center for Disease Control, 2 million Americans are infected with antibiotic-resistant bacteria each year, and at least 23,000 of them die as a result of those infections.
Wow. Okay. 2 million Americans infected each year, and how long have they been, how many years have they been gathering this kind of information? So when you think about how many millions of Americans are potentially infected, it's a mind-boggling number and an overwhelming problem.
Here's the other problem. When you go to a supermarket to buy your meat, there's a 50-50 chance the meat is already tainted with drug-resistant bacteria.
Unfortunately, more and more people dealing with that antibiotic resistance are at very great risk during an illness. So the ideas that we present to people here on Natural Doc Radio, the information will help to support wellness, will help to minimize the possibility that they'll become ill with a bacterial infection that has the potential to kill them.
And here's, this is an important point because depending upon where you get your information, you'll either hear things like what we're saying, or you might hear something that's completely opposite to what we're saying. Give you an example. The pork industry has used public relations campaigns to sugarcoat the realities of CAFO operations. In 2012, the Pork Producers Council released a video that made CAFOs look like idyllic family farms, when in reality, these factories are among the most cruel, most polluting, and most disease-ridden facilities on the planet.
Brutal methods for maintaining the livestock. And what has happened in that pork industry very recently is disease has run rampant through that livestock, killing hundreds of thousands of animals and rendering most of the other animals unfit for human consumption. And that outcome was the result of improper feeding, improper exposure to antibiotics and hormones, and that confinement that allowed the diseases to spread.
And you know, don't hold your breath for the farmers who raise the livestock to change any way soon, because it's, economically speaking, it's not in their best interest. So the way to get things changed is for you as the consumer to stop buying that type of food and go switch over to 100% grass-fed meats. Because when you do that, all of a sudden now, you're beginning to see it everywhere, grass-fed beef.
Right.
And that, and that's how the change is made. When they can't sell their polluted products, just like we've talked about genetically modified organisms, now people are looking for non-GMO. You're seeing more and more of that. You'll see more and more grass-fed beef. You'll look for wild fish, then the fish farms will disappear. The only place you'll be able to get them is in restaurants.
Unfortunately, you would still be able to get them. The problem with these farms is it kind of, the word farm and the words farmer and farm give you a very, very different mental picture than is reality. Our food is not brought to us so much by farmers anymore, but by subcontractors from very large corporations. And so no one has control from start to finish raising livestock, whether it's poultry, pork, beef, and even the fish. The process is separated into smaller steps, and the overseeing corporation has complete control over how those steps are managed. It's a very unpleasant situation when you really begin to know the details.
Well, when you think of it too, you wouldn't automatically think this way, but now you can see the connection between the pharmaceutical industry and our food industry, because they're using 80% of the antibiotics they're using raising livestock, used in fish farms, and they're promoting each other.
So imagine the golden parachute for the gentleman in the pharmaceutical company who decided, ooh, we need to market these antibiotics to the farmers, to the livestock producers. We have a huge untapped market. And years and years ago, that's what happened, because we have been eating the contaminated meats from livestock that has been over-medicated and mishandled.
So we're going to repeat this message over and over again. Organic food, wild fish, grass-fed beef. And I'm going to tell you another point on when you talk about grass-fed beef. You want to ask the question, is it grass-finished? Because a lot of times they'll say it's grass-fed, but before they bring it to slaughter, they bring it in and feed it the corn or the soy, whatever unnatural food there is. So you want grass-finished beef. And if you do those things, I think one of the hardest foods these days is really chicken.
Oh, because when you find out the details of how the poultry is raised, it's awful.
And I hate to bring up that topic just before Thanksgiving. But, they talk about grain-fed, or even organic. Yeah, you might have organic, but it's still grain-fed. And that's not the natural food for the chicken.
And unfortunately, it could be organic, but it's also possible that it is a confined feeding operation.
Now, Jana, in your experience with the people you talk to all the time, are they all getting organic food and grass-fed and all the things we discussed today?
Unfortunately, not all of those people are following those recommendations. And the people that I speak to who are finding out these details a little bit at a time for the very first time, they'll talk about how, unfortunately, organic food choices are pricier. And I tell them that many times the price is kind of close. I tell people, relax. Don't put extreme pressure on yourself to be 100% organic. At least look around for non-GMO. That's very, very important. You're sending a message with your dollars to these big corporations who stand to make billions with their different chemicals and different approaches to raising vegetables as well as animals, The truth of the matter is, non-GMO is important. Use organic and grass-fed as much as possible. I tell people, start with dairy products. Start with eggs. That's a very reasonable place to begin creating a higher standard in your diet. Then begin with the next step would be vegetables. And then ultimately what you want to do would be the grass-fed beef, the organic animal products across the board. And what you do is make those portions smaller and lots more vegetables. That would be the recommendation to very much step-by-step improve the quality of your diet.
All right. I think on that note, we'll call it a day for this edition of
NaturalDocRadio.com.
Okay, and don't forget to check our website for all the different topics we're talking about.
Bye-bye.